Welcome to the Wealth Steading Podcast. This is John Pugliano, the founder and money manager at InvestableWealth.com. You're listening to episode 13. It's August 6, 2014. We've got a full-packed episode for you today. We're going to cover the market, which is still in decline. We're also going to pick up on a couple listeners' questions that got postponed till this episode. And finally, we'll finish up with a couple items on propaganda, which helps you reflect on wealth building principle number 8, decrypt propaganda. Before we get started, let me again thank you, all of our new listeners. As a new podcast, we're very excited and encouraged as we see all the new people subscribing to the podcast. I thank you for your patience as we work through the bugs and try and get the audio and things like that better for the show. I also apologize to any of you that may have had some difficulty in the last day or so downloading episodes, particularly episode number 12. We had so many more subscribers than I anticipated that I had to move the website to a dedicated server. So there could have been some interruption there. If you missed episode 12, please go back and listen to it. And also for all of you that are new, don't forget the first 10 episodes build the foundation by laying down the 10 wealth-building principles. And those principles are what we use in every episode to reflect on the news and events of the day. So if you haven't heard those first 10 episodes, go back and listen. If you haven't subscribed in iTunes, I'd encourage you to please go do that. And while you're there, please also rate and review the show. If you want to help build a community and you want to help make this podcast better, it's really critical that you go to iTunes and you do that. Rate and review. I'd appreciate that, and a special thanks to the people that have already done that. Well, let's start off with our market review. The market had another down day today. It's been struggling for the last week or more. Last week was a worst week performance in the past 2 years. Over just these few trading sessions, all the gains that were previously made in the end of May and all through June have been eroded. There are a number of fears out there, possibly that wage inflation is heating up, and that'll cause the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates sooner. In the past few days, there's also been a big emphasis on Russia. Apparently, there's a troop buildup on the Russian border with Ukraine. Some people are concerned that maybe Russia will go in with military action. Others are just concerned about the sanctions on Russia and then Russia's counter-sanctions on the West and what impact that may have on the world economy. And it could have a major impact. Don't forget, the world economy is extremely weak, particularly Europe and especially Southern Europe. Russia, for the most part, only exports oil and energy, natural gas. That stuff is fungible. They'll be able to move it around one way or the other. The big problem could be is that Russia is a large consuming country. If they stop buying products from Eastern Europe and other parts of Europe, that could really hurt an economy that is very stagnant. Europe overall is teetering on recession and deflation. They can't afford a shock like that to their economy. And Putin has already put things in place where he's restricting food imports and a number of other things. So this could get out of hand very quickly. Don't forget what preceded the Great Depression. The Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act was what ushered in the Depression. It created a trade war and tariffs and counter-tariffs. The barriers to trade were more than what the world economy could deal with, and the economy went into depression. Don't believe that that couldn't happen again today with these sanctions. Now, will it happen? I have no idea. No one does. Don't think that the European economy is just fine and dandy. In June, Germany reported that their manufacturers' orders sank 3.2%. And people were looking for an increase of 1%. There was especially a steep decline in capital good orders. Now, these are where you see consumers and businesses investing in the future, willing to put out large outlays of money, and they had a steep decline. June's numbers were so bad, in fact, that the annual growth rate, which was projected at 5.8%, has now been revised down to a negative 2%. Germany is a manufacturer for Europe. They're literally the keystone manufacturing country. If Germany sinks, everybody in Europe suffers. And none of this took Russia into consideration. In fact, Germany's Eurozone orders plunged in June by over 10%. And for all of Central or Northern Europe's problems, Southern Europe is as a basket case. In June, Italy again officially slipped back into recession. This was their second quarter of negative GDP growth. June's number was down 20 basis points. And again, if you'd have heard people back in April and May, they were expecting Italy and these other countries to get better. Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece, these countries which are heavily indebted, they're seeing the yields on their bonds go way down. That means that people think things are getting better, that there's no danger of default. Well, that's not the case at all. If it were, Italy wouldn't be going into a recession. Now, should investors be concerned? They should be very concerned. Italy is the second biggest debt holder in Europe, and their economy is in shambles. Well, like I say, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if the sanctions in Europe or Putin's counter-sanctions are going to affect the world economy. I don't know if countries like Italy and Portugal are going to default on their loans. But I'm a student of the markets. And when I study the markets, I see certain patterns. And what I'm seeing happen now is what I've seen happen all year. Whenever there's a decline in the market, particularly a major sell-off day, it happens in large volume, or at least certainly volume above the average. For example, in the S&P 500, the market's been selling off for 2 weeks now. All the gains were wiped off from the previous 6 weeks. If you look at the last 10 trading days, the 10th previous period from today was the top of the market. The S&P 500 hit an intraday high on that day. It did so in volume that was slightly above average. Volume was only 6% above average on that day, and the market actually barely moved. Now, in these 10 periods, there were 4 other days where the market went up. So over the last 2 weeks, you've had 10 days where the market's gone up and 10 days where the market's come down. Now, remember, a day on the market is a trading period. That's a business day. Of these 5 periods over the last 2 weeks when the market was trading up, there were only 3 days when it did so in above average volume. And those days nowhere compared to the 3 major days when the market was down in the last 10 days. For example, last Thursday the market was down 2% and the trading volume was 44% more than normal. Last Friday the market was down about 30 basis points and the trade was up nearly 30% above average. On Tuesday of this week, the market was down again just about 1%, and that was in 15% higher volume than normal. Now, the good news is, at least on these bad days have progressed, the volume has, although it's more than average, it's at least going down and not increasing. That would be a major red flag. That would really concern you. Now, I'm talking about this because it's really important. And let me step back because I realize that some of you may not be familiar with this concept. When we deal with the stock market, we're not only concerned about the price going up or down, we're concerned with how many shares are trading, how many shares are trading on a particular index, or how many shares are trading on a particular stock that you may be invested in. Remember, it's all about supply and demand. The more people that want something and are willing to pay a higher price for it, that's going to drive the stock or the index up. On the other hand, the more people that are trying to sell their shares and they're trying to sell them quickly, they're concerned and they're running for the exits. That's going to drive the market down and drive it down very rapidly. And that's why looking at price just isn't good enough. You have to look at the corresponding volume. Think about your neighborhood. Let's say you live in a subdivision that has 100 homes in it. And let's say that traditionally 15% of those houses are on the market at any given time. So you look at all the houses that sold in the past month and the 15 houses that are currently on the market, and they're all priced about the same. That tells you you're in a stable market, or at least give you an idea of what the current value of your house probably is. Now, of those 15 houses that were on the market, if one of them sold just out of the blue for 30% under what everybody else was asking, that doesn't necessarily dictate a trend, or it doesn't necessarily mean that your house is going to be worth less. Maybe that family had a problem. Maybe that family had a divorce or a bankruptcy, and they just had to get out from under the loan. Maybe there was a death in the family. Maybe there was a severe structural problem or something wrong with that home. So one house that sold for a very low price out of 15 wouldn't necessarily bother you. On the other hand, let's say that of those 15 houses that were on the market, let's say that 7 of them were up for sale or had sold at a price that was what you would have considered to be significantly undervalued. See, that's a problem. That's a trend. Not only did the price change, but in this case, 50% of the houses were affected by it. So that's the same thing you want to look for in stocks. Look at the price fluctuation and look at the corresponding volume. And right now, it doesn't look very good for our markets. Another thing that is key to do when you're trying to understand the market is look what investors are moving in and out of. They call it a rotation. Last year, although most equity categories and classifications did very well, the small cap stocks, the high tech stocks, they did extremely well. As we got into 2014, and particularly in the last 3 months, the small cap stocks have totally underperformed, and the more blue chip dividend paying stocks were the ones that have done well. See, that's a sector rotation. The big institutional funds, the pension funds, these institutional firms that handle trillions of dollars, they're the ones that drive the market. And you can see what's happening by where their footprints are, what they're rotating in and out of. This past week, we've seen a huge exodus out of junk bonds. The junk bonds are what other people would call high-yield corporate bonds. But high yield is just a euphemism. It's paying a high yield because it's a junk bond. These are companies that can't get loans anywhere else. And so to satisfy their debt needs during good times, they go out and they lure investors in by paying well above average returns. The problem is if we move into a recession or if the economy starts to cool off, these weak corporations can default on their bonds at an extremely high rate, like 30-40% or more. That's why they're called junk bonds. In any case, over the last week or so, there's been a huge exodus out of junk bonds. Again, that's showing us that institutional investors are concerned that maybe the economy isn't that stable, maybe the Fed will be raising interest rates, and so they're moving their money into other things. These are all indications to us that we should be cautious. We don't want to take unnecessary risk. Now let's jump into a couple listener questions that I received, and I've boiled these down into two topics. The first one is about investing a small sum of money. I get this question all the time, and the amount varies. It may be $1,000 or $10,000, but for our purposes, let's just call it a small sum of money. People are always asking me, you know, John, I have $1,000 extra, or I have $10,000 extra. What should I do with it? How do I invest it? My answer is, and I'm sure that many of you aren't going to like this answer, but it's a tough love answer, and it's what you need to hear. If you have a small sum of money, say $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, that may seem like a lot of money to you, but in terms of investing it, it isn't. You shouldn't and you don't invest $1,000. What you need to do with that sum of money is to save it. You want to save your money so that you can build up a nest egg. You want to save your money so you can build up an investing war chest. When you go into the market, you want to be able to go in with some clout. You want to be able to get paid for your performance. And you just can't make any money investing $1,000. So what you need to do if you have a small sum of money like that, you need to start building up these different nest eggs. You have to have an emergency fund that has, you know, at least $1,000 in it, maybe 1, 2, 3 months of expenses, 6 months of expenses. I don't know what your particular situation is. But if you only have $1,000, you don't want to be putting it in the stock market. You should also be paying off your debt, paying off your credit cards, saving up for the next car you're going to buy, things like that. Don't even think about putting it in the stock market. Now, let me try and explain it in these terms, too. Let's assume you have $1,000. And we'll use that number because it's an easy number to do the math on, and it's easy to scale up or down from there, right? So if you have $100, $1,000, $10,000, it's just an order of magnitude, and the example I use with $1,000 will be easy for you to scale up or down. Let's just say you have the $1,000, and you want to invest that $1,000 in the stock market. Now, you're a smart, prudent investor, so you're just not going to go throw it into the first stock you hear about. You're going to diligently study and research the stock market, and you're going to look where you think you can get the best return for your money. Now, to do that adequately, how long is it going to take you? Is it going to take you 10 hours, 20 hours, 100 hours? It's certainly going to take you more than 1 hour. For sake of our argument, let's just say it takes you 10 hours. So you spend 10 hours researching the stock market. You pick one stock that you like. You take your $1,000 and you buy that stock. 3 months later, your stock is up 10%. Congratulations, that's a good effort. That's something to be very proud of. Your research paid off. Okay, but at the end of the day, think about it. You invested $1,000. You made 10%. So your profit is only $100. You spent 10 hours researching, so that means your net take-home is $10 an hour. Do you see how just small sums of money, it's not enough leverage for you, it's not enough mechanical investing advantage? You spent all that time and effort, and you only made $10 an hour. Chances are you make more than $10 an hour at your job. So rather than spending the 10 hours figuring out where to invest your $1,000, maybe you should have spent 10 hours getting additional overtime. Or 10 hours training so that you can qualify for a better job or to get a raise or to be able to leave your company and start your own company. Do you see where I'm going with this? When you only have a small amount of money, you're not going to profit that much by investing it. You're in the phase where you need to save and build. Your earning potential is what's more important at that point. You need to figure out how to increase your earning potential so that you can save more so that eventually you can move into the third phase, which is investment income. Now, what I'm talking about is laid out in Wealth Building Principle number 3, which is production is the source of wealth. And it talks about these three phases. Phase 1 is the apprenticeship phase. Phase 2 is the business model or the entrepreneurial phase. And phase 3 is the investment income phase. See, if you haven't already figured out how to earn and save money, you're jumping ahead to the investment income phase, and it's not going to work out for you. So again, to answer that question, how do I invest a small sum of money? The answer is you don't. You save it. And when you get a substantial amount, then you can invest it. So what is a substantial amount? Well, it's going to be different for different people. It depends on where you're at in your net worth, where you're at in your wealth building process, right? Some people's lifestyles are where they're happy at $1 million. Other people aren't happy until they have $15 or $20 million. So let's break it down this way. You know that example I used for you where you took 10 hours to study and learn, and then that netted you $10 an hour. That's how you got your overall $100 profit. Well, think about it this way. What if you had $100,000 to invest, and again, you spent that same 10 hours studying the stock market, and you came up with 3 or 4 or 5 stocks that you were going to split your $100,000 into, and at the end of that 6 weeks or 3 month period, again, you got a 10% return. Well, now in this case, on $100,000, your net profit would be $10,000, so you would have been bringing in $1,000 per hour. Do you see how that makes a difference? Chances are you're probably not making $1,000 an hour. Chances are by working a little bit of overtime, you're not going to make an extra $10,000. So in that case, that's where $100,000 might be your threshold. Maybe it's $50,000, maybe it's $250,000. I don't know what it is for you, but use that rule of thumb, do some back of the envelope calculations, and you can figure out what's right for you. Now, as far as another listener question, I've also received some questions about Ebola, whether this is a pandemic or whether it's all just hype. This is probably prompted by my comments a couple episodes ago about Ebola and how it could affect the stock market. Now, let me tell you how I think about these things. It doesn't matter whether Ebola is a pandemic or not. And that's ultimately. And I'm talking about in the way it would affect the stock market. You see, because perception is reality. Stocks all trade on anticipation of future earnings. If traders or investors are concerned that Ebola may affect the economy of Africa, or it may affect commodity prices, or it may affect airline travel and thus affect the profitability of airline companies, international airline companies like Delta or Lufthansa. If they're worried about these earnings being affected because people have the fear of a pandemic, even if the pandemic hasn't occurred or doesn't ever occur, it could still slow down air travel. It could still disrupt trade of commodities. So it could hurt these companies. On the other hand, it could also benefit companies, right? Medical supply companies, companies that make face masks and latex gloves, disposable medical products. These companies could all benefit, again, in anticipation of a pandemic. So whether it's real or whether it's hype doesn't really matter to me. Like we talked about before, I look at the price-volume ratio. If I see companies, say, like Johnson & Johnson that makes, you know, disposable medical products, if I see their stock going up in large volume, then that tells me the traders, other investors, they're concerned about this pandemic, and they're investing in Johnson & Johnson, then maybe I should too. Maybe I should look at it a little deeper. Likewise, if I see a panic and people are selling out of international airlines, well, maybe I want to sell that short, or maybe I want to sell my holdings. Remember, the stock market always anticipates. It's always looking at future earnings. So perception is reality, at least in the short term. And let's face it, we're all short-term traders when it comes down to it. Nobody wants to see their stock drop 75%, even if it's just over a seven-week period. Because how do you know if it's ever going to recover? Let me explain this in another way, and I'm going to take Ebola out of it, because that may be too much of an emotional issue for some people. So let's step back and talk about something that's already happened in the past, and we can use that as an illustration. Let's go back to 2008, November-December timeframe, right after President Obama was elected. Now, there were many people that were worried about gun control. There were many people that were worried about restrictive legislation on guns, particularly handguns, assault rifles, all these kind of things. Now, we can look back over this six-year period, and we know that although there were some attempts at things like that, that there was never actually a ban on handguns, a ban on ammunition. There's been no federal legislation that has repealed the Second Amendment. People can still go out and buy handguns. I realize there may be state restrictions, things like that. I don't want to get down in the weeds on this. I'm just trying to use this as an example. But in November, December of 2008, there were a lot of people that feared that these restrictions would take place. And then over the last 6 years, every time there's been a school shooting or some kind of mass murder, again, there's been a concern. And indeed, there has been, you know, legislation brought forward, but none of it's passed, right? So it has only been the fear of regulation, not the actual imposition of regulation. The reason I bring this up is to point to a stock, Sturm Ruger. In December of 2008, right after President Obama was elected, you could have picked that stock up for about $6. $6 a share. And although it's been up and down over the course of these last 6 years, it's pretty much gone straight up. In fact, at the end of last year, the beginning of this year, it was trading right around $80 a share. So from $6 to $80, that's more than a 1,200% return. That's a 1,233% return. Now, it's down from that now. I don't know. It's around $50 or $60 today. But it's still a significant return. And the point I want to make out is the Second Amendment hasn't been nullified. It's still legal to own handguns. It's still legal to buy ammunition. But the fear, the perception, that's what drove the stock price up, because it was anticipation of earnings. Every time people feared that they may not be able to buy a gun, they went out and bought one. And correspondingly, Sturm Ruger stock kept going up every quarter because they kept selling more guns and ammunition and they kept making more money. Do you see how that works? So that's how I relate that to the Ebola virus. It doesn't matter if it's a pandemic. It just matters that people fear that it may become a pandemic. That's what's important. Now, a couple more things here before we finish up. I wanted to mention propaganda. We discussed the importance of propaganda in wealth building principle number 8. As an investor, you need to be able to decrypt propaganda, because everybody's trying to message something to you. Everyone's marketing something to you. Everybody's trying to sell something to you. That's from the government to your kids to small and large businesses. Everybody's trying to get into your pocketbook. I saw two interesting articles where I wanted to point out propaganda to you. The first one has to do with Yahoo Finance. Now, I use Yahoo Finance. There's a lot of information on there. It's all free. It's a great way to track down information on stocks, what the market's doing. A good place to go. I'd recommend that you go there. However, like I talk about in being able to decrypt propaganda, you want to use multiple sources of information. You want to assume that you're only getting partial truths from all those sources of information, and then you want to triangulate to figure out what the real truth is. I bring this up because there was an announcement this week about Yahoo Finance and how they charge for companies to get positioned as news items. So when you go to Yahoo Finance or any of the Yahoo News or really any of them, I'm sure Google and all of them do it, and you see a particular article there, and there's a headline, and the headline's always compelling, you know, the five things you need to know before the market opens tomorrow, or three things you can do to help save for retirement, or 10 ways to reduce your mortgage payment. You know, all those kind of things, they're all geared to get you to click on them. Well, they don't just happen to be there by happenstance. The editors just don't put those there because they think they're newsworthy and they want you to be informed. They put those there and they have compelling headlines because they want you to click on them because they're paid for those clicks. Seeking Alpha, you may be familiar with that. That's a very popular investor news website. They mentioned this week that they're discontinuing their relationship with Yahoo Finance, that they're no longer going to be paying for clicks on Yahoo Finance, and that they're going to use that money to pay their contributors more and, I guess, for other marketing advertising. When you see those compelling headlines, they're not headlines. They're advertisements, and people want you to click on them because that's how they get paid. Be forewarned. Be cautious. The other area of propaganda for the week came from a retired congressman. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Barney Frank, congressman that served for many decades from Massachusetts. Well, now he's retired, and so like all these guys, they feel compelled to tell the truth once they retire. And you're going to be shocked by this, but Barney is disappointed in President Obama. The Honorable Mr. Frank, in fact, says that he believes that the president has made a major political mistake by lying about details of Obamacare. Now, you have to remember that Barney Frank was the guy that championed all this. Barney Frank was the guy that stood by silent while the president was lying about this, as both a candidate and as the president that was trying to implement it. Barney Frank wasn't part of the solution. Barney Frank was part of the problem. Just like he was in the earlier crisis of the real estate meltdown, Barney Frank was one of the key guys in the government that was pushing for affordable housing, pushing to get people loans that they couldn't pay back, that they couldn't afford, pushing to bend the rules so that banks and corporations and builders and all these people colluded to put consumers into houses that they couldn't afford. And then when the inevitable happens, when these consumers default on those loans, Mr. Frank is the first guy to stand up and say, the free market failed, businesses are greedy, you can't trust them, they're hurting the little guy, and the government needs to step in and have more regulations. When it was him and his ilk that created the problem. But I digress. So let's get back to the article at hand. So now Mr. Frank, though now that he's retired, he's willing to tell somewhat of the truth about the Affordable Care Act, how it was way oversold, how the promises that the president made were never going to happen. And Barney says he's disappointed in that. Oh, no, he's not disappointed from a moral standpoint. It isn't that he thinks you should tell the truth. See, Barney thinks it's bad because he thinks it's bad from a political standpoint, that inevitably this was going to blow up and the president would be there to get the blame. And so that's why he thinks the president shouldn't lie. He has no problem with lying as long as you can get away with it politically. Here's what he says, and I'll quote him. Don't lie to people because you're going to get caught up in and it's going to have this tsunami that you have now. My political motto, very simple. I have always told the truth and nothing but the truth. Unquote. Now, isn't it amazing that he can say that with a straight face as a politician? But he offers a caveat, so let me give you that. So here I quote him again. But I don't volunteer the whole truth in every situation. Unquote. So what the Honorable Mr. Frank is telling us is that he'll let his colleagues go out and lie and cheat and misrepresent, and he'll remain there silent because he benefits from it. And you know why he gets away with that? You know why him and people like him continue to get reelected? Because we get the government we deserve. We're represented in Congress and in the White House by reflection of our society. Everybody's trying to get something for nothing. Everybody's trying to lie and steal their way to the top. So don't expect the political situation to get better anytime soon. Well, that wraps up our show for today. Welcome again to all of our new listeners. If you have questions or comments for the show, you can go to our website, wealthsteading.com. I look forward to getting your questions and formulating an answer for a future episode. As we've discussed, the stock market is in a very turbulent time. I urge you to use caution. And as always, I wish you the best of returns. This is John Pugliano. Thank you for listening.